Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Half Year Results 2015 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Wednesday the 4th of February 2015. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Matt Bekier, CEO. Please go ahead, Mr. Bekier.
Thank you, operator, and good morning, everybody. I'm pleased to be here today to take you through some of the highlights in the presentation. I'm joined by Chad Barton, our CFO, who will take you through the financials. Let me just touch on a couple of the key points. I'm in the presentation, which I hope you've got in front of you, on page number 4. And you know, hopefully there's not a huge surprise here because we've given earnings guidance in October, but we've reported first half normalized EBITDA of $261 million, actual EBITDA of $241 million, both up very substantially on the prior period. What's been driving this result is really a really strong revenue performance. You see there on the first point, total gross revenue is up 26% across the group. And what is particularly pleasing for us, I think, is that every line of business has contributed to that and every property has contributed to that. So tables, terrific performance, up 17.7%, slots up 16%, international VIP up 86% on an actual basis and up 96% on a normalized basis. So it's a really strong, broad-based performance of the business. We've been able to translate this revenue growth to earnings by holding operating costs down. Operating costs are 7.1%, largely in reflection of some of the investments that we've made, but mostly because of the increased activity across the business. As a result of those results, the board has declared an interim dividend of 5 cents. That's up 25% on the prior period. It's a little bit below our target payout ratio of 50% of actual profits, and just reflects the fact that we're sort of sitting here waiting to know a bit more about the Queen's Wharf decision, and you know, we're just holding our powder a little bit dry on that one. The last point I wanted to make on the introductory slide is probably reflective of my age and tenure. You know, I was around in 2009 when we announced Project Star and provided guidance that said we expect, in order to generate returns, we expected to generate EBITDA of $340 million at Star in 2014. Well, on a run rate basis, if you look at the last 12 months, we are now running at that sort of level of performance. And, you know, it's taken us 6 months longer than we thought it would. But I'm pleased that we've passed that mark now, and I look forward to continue to grow these earnings aggressively. With that, I'd like to sort of turn a little bit more detail on the individual property performance. So if I can ask you to turn to page number 6, we look at the Star. Star obviously has had very good numbers. Gross revenue up 38.8%. Normalized EBITDA is up to about 37.7% as well. Very, very pleasing, obviously. What's been driving that? Great performance on the tables. The tables are up 19.4%. We do reference there that the hold has been favorable in that line of business. We were running ahead of our theoretical and ahead of last year. It probably contributed 4 to 5% of that growth. But notwithstanding, volume growth has been very strong. Multi-terminal games business continues to power along with 24% growth. Slots performance, great performance, up 16% for the half, really driven by either the mix of our loyalty system, our optimization of our product offering, and the jackpot strategy. The VIP business is largely, as I said earlier on, it's had a great year and it's largely booked here at the Star, so it's up 124%. Non-gaming, and that's true, by the way, across all our properties, non-gaming, we are actually quite happy with the non-gaming performance. So gross revenue is up 12.8%. That's a proxy for how much activity there is in the business. Now, cash revenue is down 2.2%. The difference between the two of them is the amount of self-discounting and the discounting that's happening from customers on the loyalty system. It gives you a sense of how much that is now being used and how that's being valued by our customers. One of the things that's putting a little pressure on our margins at Star is the tax arrangements. So with the rapid growth of the gaming business, we are creeping into higher marginal tax rates on the gaming tax. We we moved up to 44.5% in the first half. That probably cost us about $6 million on a like-for-like basis. But overall, obviously, a very pleasing experience. And the focus for the last 6 months, in fact, the last 12 months, really have been on taking the investments that have been made and driving the performance. Notwithstanding, we did make some minor investments and continue to work on some capital investment at the start. This is set out on page number 7. So we've done some redevelopment of the Southern Room. We opened an additional food outlet, a pizza outlet. We have started the redevelopment and expansion of our VIP offerings, and we have started the redevelopment of the hotel, the residences. I previously mentioned to or told the market that we expected to spend some $500 million over 5 years for the next stage of the expansion of Star. This won't be happening this year. We are in the middle of master planning to really get ready for that. So this year you should expect that CapEx at the Star is well below the $100 million run rate that we had previously highlighted. So I can now turn to Queensland. Pleasing again, good performance in Queensland as well. Revenue up 8.6%, EBITDA up 19.1%. So, you know, obviously good operating margin improvement on the back of tight expense control. Main gaming floor and private gaming rooms developing well. Multi-terminal games up 58.4% of a very low base. We make a point there about the significant long-term potential. I think you should think of our MTGM business in Queensland the same way. It's about the same level of maturity as we had at Star in 2009, 2010. So there's a very substantial upside that we can see in this business and gives us the confidence that we, you know, should build out our properties to create the space to deploy this product. Slots, you know, remarkably almost the same growth rate as at Star, which talks to the fact that we have the same forces at work. In Queensland, you know, in particular now with the modernization of the regulatory environment that happened 12 months ago, we are no longer at a disadvantage to other states, and that's particularly beneficial to the Gold Coast. VIP business is relatively small in Queensland. Non-gaming business, as I said, is really impacted by the same factors of self-discounting, as well as some closures that we had in place, particularly the Gold Coast, as we're putting in place new product. And that new product is set out on page number 9. So the Gold Coast is going through a $345 million expansion program. What we've done in the first half is we redeveloped the pool area. We put in place 2 restaurants, an Italian restaurant with an outdoor eating area, and a Japanese restaurant, which is the sister restaurant to Sokyo here in Sydney, and we have commenced the upgrade of the exterior by painting the property. Should say that the restaurants have been open for just under 2 months, very positive results. We're very pleased with the reception in the market, we're pleased with the visitation and the price points that we're achieving. In 2015, for the remainder of the financial year, there's obviously we're ramping up the capital expenditure at Jupiter's. So we're fixing up some VIP salons on the top floor. We're now going through the hotel and refreshing the hotel rooms. We refresh the atrium. We complete the outdoors work. And we'll start, most importantly, start the construction for the new hotel tower towards the end of the second half. So that project is progressing well, and we're really pleased with the results that we're seeing so far. The second property in Brisbane, in Queensland, is Brisbane. You know the site. Brisbane's performed really well. Done had a terrific performance in slots. Very good margin performance on the back of that. But the big story in Brisbane is obviously the developments around Queen's Wharf. I hope you've all seen the fly-throughs and the documentation that we put out around our proposal. We are very proud of the work that the teams pulled together, and we think it's a compelling proposal. We're now waiting to see what the political will look like and who the decision makers will be in Queensland, and we look forward to engaging with those decision makers to take the project to the next stage, because we do think it's a great proposal and we are absolutely committed to the opportunity. On page number 11, we briefly touch just on the slots business, simply because it's an important area, obviously, for us of profitability. It's a real focus area for us for the next few years. It's pleasing to see that, as I referenced in the individual property discussions, that our market share on a year-on-year basis continues to expand and track in the right direction. The last line of business is the VIP business. A very strong performance, obviously, 96% up in terms of gross revenue. Good front money. The main change that I want to call out here is, you know, we have experienced an even greater switch to the VIP business, to the junket business in this line of business. We're now looking at about 84% of turnover being booked through junkets. That has implications on the margins, which are under pressure in this business. The margins in this half are probably particularly under pressure because a number of these junkets operated under profit share agreements, and we just had a curious situation in the first half where, you know, the win rate on those profit share agreements was actually pretty high, so we paid extra money out rather than recouping it. The actual win rate was at 1.33%, below the 1.43 that we model as a long-term average win rate. But importantly, and Chad's going to talk to that, and we put some stuff into the appendix, you know, while the business has expanded very substantially, we are really pleased that the quality of the earnings that we're generating here are very strong and that the net receivables have reduced substantially. So the quality of the book and the outstandings has improved dramatically. So it's been a terrific all-around performance of that side of the business. So on page number 13, if I had to summarize the last 6 months, I'd say made good progress in delivering to the plan that we set out some 12 months ago. We've got now a stable leadership and stronger operational capabilities in place than ever before, and we're seeing some of that obviously flow through to the numbers. We've made good progress in all our strategic priorities around building the team, driving operational performance, delivering on the Gold Coast, participating in the Queen's Wharf process, and then preparing the Star for the next stage of development. We are also turning our minds to two more topics now in the second half and in the years to come. One around the more fundamental transformation to improve our customer service and become a lot more customer-centric. And over the coming years, you'll be hearing more about this. We believe that this is going to be the next stage to in the evolution of the company. And secondly, we are making good progress and spending a lot of effort on fine-tuning our loyalty program, because, again, we think that in the long term, this is one of the biggest drivers of our revenue growth in the future. So that sort of concludes my observations. Chad, do you want to take to the financials?
Thanks, Matt. Good morning, everyone. First of all, just turning to page 15 on the P&L for the half, I'm going to focus to start with on the normalised results. As Matt has already highlighted, revenue has increased 28% in the half. We've seen good momentum across both the domestic and the international VIP business, with domestic gaming revenue up 17% and international VIP rebate business up 96%. Strength in the half's performance has led to a 58% increase in taxes and commissions, and this has been driven by three things. Firstly, commissions have risen on the back of the record IRB volumes. We've also seen an increase in the junket business in the half that has led to commissions rising to 0.84% of turnover. Taxes and levies have increased 25% on the back of both increased revenue and higher average gaming tax of 29.9% at the Star during the half. And thirdly, we have had increased promotional activities across all properties, driven primarily by the loyalty program. Just looking at operating expenses are up 7%, but this is also on the back of the strong volumes. And the drivers of this lift relates primarily to staff costs to service these increased volumes. This cost control has led to a normalised EBITDA of $261.4 million, which is up 31.5% on PCP, and we've seen a 50 basis point margin expansion in the period. Depreciation and amortisation has increased marginally on the back of higher capex, with interest costs reducing 27% following strong cash flows and reduced gearing levels. Income tax is in line with the profitability increase, with an average tax rate in the half of 28.2%. This leads to a normalized NPAT increase of 77.7% to $112.6 million, being a margin expansion of 270 basis points to 9.7% NPAT margin. The difference between normalized and statutory NPAT is driven in the main by the actual win rate of IRB of 1.33% versus our normalized long-term win rate of 1.43%. And this is a $15 million impact on the statutory profit. The only other thing of note within here is the significant items, which are a net $1 million in the half. This is net of $8 million on a profit on sale of Townsville, less $9 million associated with the Queens Wharf Brisbane bid costs. Just turning now to the balance sheet, and there's only a couple of points I'd like to highlight within the balance sheet. Firstly is cash conversion of EBITDA has again been strong this half at 110%. This accompanied with the proceeds from the sale of Townsville of $67.5 million has seen net debt reduce by $129 million to $505 million at December. If you actually look at net debt over the last 12 months, we have reduced our net debt by $260 million. Gross debt has remained relatively flat at $797 million, despite a repayment of $80 million in the half. And this is due to mark-to-market adjustments on the USPP loans as a result of movement in the Aussie dollar. The increase in gross debt has been offset by our cross-currency swaps where we're fully hedged on the USPP loans, which brings the net debt back to $505 million. Total trade receivables have increased 33% on the back of a 97% increase in IRB volumes. But past dues not impaired has nearly halved, highlighting a significantly improved ageing profile. Receivables past due after impairments, which we believe the best demonstrates the risk on future collections, has fallen to $21.4 million, despite the significantly expanded business. Just turning now to page 17 and our funding profile at the end of the half. As previously highlighted, net debt's at $505 million. We have at the end of the half undrawn facilities amounting to $410 million. Our finance costs were $26 million in the half, and we expect those to be between $50 to $55 million for the full year. And our current debt maturity is 4 years on average. Just turning now to page 18 and the capital expenditure. Matt's already touched on the major capital programs that are underway at both the Star and Jupiter's. So the only thing I'd like to highlight on this slide is that CapEx for the first half was $75 million. We're now expecting CapEx to be between $200 and $250 for the year, so clearly we're anticipating a ramp-up of CapEx on the major programs that Matt discussed in the second half. We continue to expect depreciation and amortization to be between $150 and $160 million for the full year. Now on page 19, in conclusion of the financial sections of the presentation, this slide really speaks for itself in the momentum that has been built in the business over the last 12 months and the new run rate that's been established. This is clearly the confirmation that the group is executing against its plan. I particularly want to draw your attention to the chart on the bottom right of the slide that highlights our net debt to EBITDA has continued to fall as earnings have improved as the company de-gears. Our current gearing ratio is 1.2 times. And if you go back to FY12, this is a drop from 2.4 to 1.2 times. So we've halved our gearing in just over a couple of years. And this puts the company in a strong position to pursue shareholder value enhancing growth initiatives as and when they might arise. I'll hand back to Matt to conclude the call.
Thank you, Chad. So on the 4th of February, it's a bit early to be definitive about the second half. But what we're seeing early on is that in the domestic gaming business, and domestic business, in fact, across all lines of business, the same trends as in the first half prevailed. So we're happy with the revenue momentum that we're seeing. In the VIP business, the VIP business is probably even harder to read because of the timing of Chinese New Year, which really only builds up in the second half of February. Probably all I want to say there is that, you know, the business has in the first 5 weeks performed to our expectations, and that the bookings for Chinese New Year are building up in line with our expectations. So, you know, it's progressing to plan, which means that for the second half of this financial year, our priorities really remain unchanged. We're very focused on continuing to drive our earnings and demonstrate earnings growth, continued earnings growth across all of our properties. We want to go very hard on the expansion in Jupiter's and make sure that we deliver a quality product there. And we look forward to working with the Queensland Government and our consortium partners to advancing our proposal for Queen's Wharf. That's really the focus for us, so it's not that different from where we were 6 months ago. That concludes our comments. If I can now hand it back to the operator to take questions, and we'll answer them to the best of our abilities. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the star key followed by the number 2. Your first question comes from the line of Matt Ryan from JP Morgan. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Just looking at Star PGR business, is clearly very, very strong growth there. I'm just wondering whether you can tell us where you think that growth is coming from. Do you think it's sort of market share gains or overall growth in that market?
Thanks, Matt. Look, when we analyze the business, what we see is that we have, you know, some growth from customers that we've not seen before, but most of the growth is from existing customers. So that says that the loyalty system and the way that we service these customers is getting traction, and we're getting a bigger share of their wallet.
Mm. Would you say the sort of underlying growth from those existing customers is pretty similar to the EGM growth that you're getting, and maybe the incremental growth up to the 24% is new customers?
Look, it's, you have to think of it probably more like a pipeline. You know, the MGF is our, you know, recruiting ground where people join, you know, the casino, sign up for loyalty, and then they migrate through the ranks up into the private gaming room. So there's a fair bit of migration from, you know, one level to the next level. So I can't give you the precise number of what the, you know, what the growth of these customers is, because the universe of the customers in the PGR continues to evolve. Does
sure.
that make sense? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, I can understand that. And then just one on the VIP expectations, noting that you know it's very early on. I just wondered whether you think this growth is sort of going to slow at some stage this year.
Look, let me tell you, my read of the market is that it's getting a lot tougher. You know, we know that, you know, collections in by some of the junket operators are getting more challenging. We know that competition for the business is getting pretty aggressive. You know, some people have managed to negotiate even better tax rates than we have. You know, I think we have to be very mindful of the profitability of this line of business, and you know, that is the focus for us. I don't want us to take any exorbitant risk right now when it's very hard to read the market. And you know, I'm happy to just drive the earnings of the business that we have.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
This question comes from a line of Mark Bryan from Merrill Lynch. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, Matt. Morning, Chad. Just a couple, if I may. Matt, in the past, you've always alluded to the first half broadly being similar to the second half from an EBITDA perspective, obviously balancing out Christmas and Chinese New Year. But is that still broadly your view for this year? And secondly, just on the operational leverage of the business, we can see from your slide on operational benchmarks that employee costs are being well controlled as a percentage of revenue, but obviously, as you've alluded, tax and the VIP commissions have unwound the operational leverage. Keen, if you can, to dig in a bit to your labor pool and just how optimized that is, and if you can continue to control that over the next 12 to 18 months when you see volumes improving. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So in terms of the cyclicality of the business, you know, I think what we said in the past was that historically the domestic business was a little bit bigger in the first half than the second half, and the VIP business was bigger in the second half than in the first half. Now, so it really depends on how these two businesses perform relative to each other to tell you whether, you know, how cyclical it's going to be. And that's why I'm hesitant to give you a straightforward answer and say, yes, we should be able, you know, the second half should be just like the first half, just because the two parts of our business behave so differently. And on the VIP business, you know, I'm very reluctant to make a, you know, 6-month forecast when we can only see bookings a couple of weeks out.
Yep.
And you know, the comparatives for us, if you think about particularly the VIP business, you know, 12 months ago, we had a strong first quarter and a terrible second quarter, which made for a very average first half. We've blitzed that now, but does that mean that the second half now is going to be great? You know, there's no certainty over that, particularly because the second half last year was actually a great second half. It was a record half for us then. So, you know, I just need to caution you, particularly around the VIP business.
Okay.
In terms of the core business, you know, we have a lot of momentum and a lot of good initiatives, you know, underway, getting traction. So I'm actually very positive about, you know, what we're doing, how we're doing it, and how that's going to drive earnings. On the expense base, labor cost is obviously our biggest cost pool, and that's why it was important for us to make sure that we can control that. It continues to be the main driver, probably, of profitability in the long run. If you look at our overall margin, you're right, it was impacted, particularly at Star, by the additional taxes. It was impacted by the business mix. You know, as we have more VIP business, that tends to be a lower margin business than the core business. And, you know, we were, I think, you know, thoughtful or mindful in terms of, you know, some of the provisioning that we took, so I mean, and which came through as through our expenses. So if you think of the VIP business, the reason why our in net receivables are looking so good was because we were very cautious in the first half with how we provided for that business.
Okay. Thanks, Matt.
Your next question comes from the line of Sam Theodore from UBS. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Guys, I've got probably one for you, Matt, and one for Chad. So I'll start with you, Matt. Over a year ago now, you and John implemented a new program on player loyalty. I remember at the time it removed some of the more unprofitable free play, but allowed for the introduction of things like the 2 million slot jackpot, which you said was going to be more productive, and by the looks of the results, you're right. And the commentary, Chad mentioned an increased promotional activity over the period. Can you talk about where that's gone? And also, I think you mentioned that play loyalty is going to be one of the big drivers going forward, so maybe touch on what can be done here to add more value to that area.
Look, I think I'll let Chad correct me later on, but I think the comment about promotional activity was more around actually loyalty related, the work that we're putting into loyalty and activating the customer base.
Yes,
the point that, you know, if I think about our business, you know, beyond the next 12 months, think of it in the next 5 years, that when there's going to be competition in Sydney, one of the most important assets that we need to develop is a customer base that we can communicate with. And the only way to communicate around gaming is if a customer signs up to a club, to a loyalty system. That's why loyalty is so unbelievably important. Now, we can't do above-the-line advertising about our gaming, even if we're differentiated. You know, we have the biggest jackpot in the country right now on the floor. For all of you in Sydney, you know, it hasn't gone off recently, so, you know, it might be your lucky day today. But, you know, we can't advertise that unless you are a member in the club. And so So if you think ahead of how do we position ourselves competitively in the market, it's all about expanding that customer base that we can communicate with, and finding ways that are proven and profitable ways of activating the customer base to consolidate their gaming with us and to activate the additional trips. And that's all of that always brings me back to loyalty. And if I look at what we have so far, you know, I'd say we've made a good start. We know that it activates the customers at the top end of the tier very effectively. You see that in the PGR numbers. But we have huge untapped potential. I give it a 3 out of a potential of 10. And that's why I realize I'm droning on about it, but it is just the biggest asset that we need to develop over the next 5 years.
And just confirming that the free play issue that we used to have,
yep.
Has that started to be reintroduced, or you've kept that out? It's more about play acquisition.
We've always continued to do a little bit of free play, but a lot more targeted, right? So you won't see, you wouldn't see not the amount and not the broad-based free play that had been issued in the past. But free play, we know that our customers, we've done enough tests now. We know how they value it. And, we may use more of it, but more in a targeted fashion that gives us maximum bang for our buck.
Okay, thank you. And Chad, just looking at the balance sheet cost of debt issue that's been sort of hampering the company for a while now, it looks like there's still a cost over 10% given where your net debt is. I know some of that is because of the longer dated USPP, but you've been there a while now. What do you think you can do around reducing that cost of debt? And just one other thing, I looked at the drawn down debt. It looks like the working capital facility is being drawn when you've got undrawn facilities that you're paying for. I would have thought that's more expensive debt. If you can give us some colour on the rationale around that.
Yeah, so Sam, first of all, the working capital facility is actually our cheapest debt, and that's why it's drawn, and that's why it's sitting in a current liability at the end of the half, because we're actually trying to maximise the position on some of our cheapest funding and making sure that that's drawn at the end of the half. In terms of the USPP debt goes out through to 2021, where the major tranche goes. And as you see, as I highlight in the call, with the US dollar moving up and the Aussie dollar moving down from it, the derivative position, we're fully hedged within that profile. But that is, some expensive debt. And so, the strategy at the moment is to offset some of the expensive debt with what we can get on some shorter term cycles within the local marketplace to try and average down the debt cost of debt as a whole.
But Sam, the reality is you're not going to touch those two facilities until they expire.
No,
and the cost is largely derived because of the expensive swaps.
Yeah.
Right? And so we're stuck with those. Now, it's only 22 million in the half, so it's not a overly burdensome number, but you're not going to move that dial dramatically.
No.
So can I ask, the working capital facilities are typically more expensive, aren't they? So why would they be cheaper than the undrawn debt?
Yeah, no, they're cheaper because they're normally on shorter cycles and they're normally at 12 months. The other thing is, too, is, last time we did the working cap, very sharp rates on the basis of thinking about doing something else from a debt perspective. They're at the moment somewhere in the order of between 50 and 75 basis points cheaper than the syndicated funding agreements.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Adam Alexander from Goldman Sachs. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just a couple from me. Firstly, Matt, just on VIP, outstanding performance in the face of what we saw in Macau for the last 6 months. Can you just give us some colour around, what you're seeing in terms of the junkets and the anti-graft policies that have been put in place from Beijing? Is that benefiting Australia? And it's hard to give guidance, but when does that start to slow up a little bit? And then the second one, just on Jupiter's slot revenue, we've had the change in regulations there, which we're now starting to lap. Is there any way you can sort of break out what part of that EGM revenue growth is being driven by that reg change versus, you know, some of your own initiatives like the loyalty program.
On the first issue of the VIP, I understand how some of the anti-graft measures impact on Macau. Sure, that would be a huge benefit to us in isolation. Right? If I look at the business that we're getting, a lot of it is repeat business. A lot of it is from customers who have other reasons other than gambling to come to Australia. So they have family or businesses and everything. So, look, it is. I think we have to acknowledge that obviously the Macau is under the pump, and maybe what is happening is that the junkets who get substantially higher commissions from taking business to Australia, that makes it that much more attractive that for the bit of the business that they can steer to send that to Australia, and you know, and get a little bit of extra commission when you know when there's not that much business going around. So that's my first observation. In terms of where the business is coming from, you know, it is very much junket based, and that's all, you know, basically North Asia, largely China, Hong Kong, Macau. But we also have seen a significant uptick in our Thai business. So Southeast Asia is also doing well, and that the whole graft issue doesn't really get into the picture.
Great.
In terms of your second question on Jupiter's, how much of the growth relates to loyalty, how much relates to the concessions? Look, I'd like to say that, you know, because the slots growth in New South Wales and in Queensland is very similar, I'd have to say that the government concessions have largely washed through. You know, we've had the bill acceptors in now for almost months. Which was probably the biggest one. We're still rolling additional new machines through. So, you know, I have to give you judgment and say maybe the economy in New South Wales adds, you know, a couple of percentage points, 2 to 3 percentage points to the growth relative to Queensland. But then Queensland compensates it through concessions. But you know, because the two growth rates are so similar, I find it hard to be, you know, too sanguine about it.
Okay, thanks. Just one other one. Do you think there's any impact on VIP turnover from a lower Australian dollar?
No, we've not seen that in the past. We've not seen currency fluctuations impact.
Yep. Okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Brian Han from the Morningstar. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Oh, thanks, gentlemen. Just two questions. Firstly, Matt, you were talking about the $340 million EBITDA target for Star that you set back in 2009. Now, congratulations that you know, it's now tracking to that level. But at that time, would you have foreseen or budgeted for VIP being such a big part of the business? And also, what do you think is the optimal balance between VIP and grind for a property like Star? And my second question, if I may, is I noticed that you guys spent about $50 million on an asset that you plan to sell and lease back. Can you just remind me what that is?
Yeah, so the asset is the third jet. You know,
right.
Our jets, we basically lease them. But in order to, you know, you can't lease an unfinished jet, so it's a brand new thing that is now being fitted out.
Right.
On the VIP business, you're right. When we go back to the original business case, we had anticipated a major difference in our business case is the size of the table games business. We had expected a bigger table games business here at Star and had not expected the VIP business to be as large as it is. In terms of, you know, the ideal mix between the two property between the two lines of business, I'm very comfortable with where it is right now, and I don't see any real conflict. You know, we don't have to make any trade-offs and say, you know, we'll take an extra bit of growth from here, you know, over that growth somewhere else, because, you know, the rooms that are being used are quite different rooms, so we're not running into capacity constraints at this point. So I'm not that phased from an operational point of view. From a strategic point of view, Our focus, you know, is very strongly on the domestic business. You know, the VIP business is great. Love to have as much of it as we possibly can. But in terms of predictability, repeatability, and risk, the domestic business is, you know, is really where our focus is.
Okay, great. Thanks, Matt.
Your next question comes from the line of Larry Gandler from Credit Suisse. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Good day, gentlemen. A couple of questions for me. I guess first on the balance sheet, there was an extension of payables or a large lift in the payables balance. Just wondering if your cash conversion in the second half will be above 100% or we'll see some timing effect of that payables line.
The quick answer is yes. You'll see some volatility there.
Okay. And my second question, Matt, pertains to the loyalty system.
Yep.
Or loyalty program, rather. Can you just walk us through the tiers that you have and also how you manage the tiers in the in-star, in the venue, with the various locations and rooms and offerings you have for the different tiers?
Yeah. So in the loyalty system, you currently have four tiers. The entry tier, Red Plus, then you've got Pearl, and you've got Black, and above Black, there's Diamond, there's a Diamond tier for the top end. Diamond and Black customers get access to our Sovereign Room, the private gaming room, and the Pearl customers get access to our Oasis room at Star. But if you're a Black customer or a Diamond customer, you can play essentially anywhere you want.
Yes. So so you've got the two rooms, Oasis and Sovereign.
Yep.
And I guess I'm going to make a comparison to Crown here. It's a bit more tiered or complex at Crown. I think they've got four rooms there. Do you need to offer more differentiation in Star, maybe in terms of rooms or locations?
We certainly need to offer higher quality. When we did the $870 million, we focused on the main gaming floor and the food and beverage in the hotel. We really didn't get to the top tiers of those rooms. And so when we look out into our master plan, the real focus is, you know, we see substantial growth potential in that mid-tier, the Oasis, and our offering there is not competitive. And if you look at our offering today in the Sovereign Room, you know, we can do a whole lot better than what we're currently offering to these customers. So those, in both those areas, we will need to make investments. The suggestion that there may be sub-tiering in sub-rooms, yeah, that, you know, that's on the table, that we might choose to tailor and position certain rooms within those tiers differently.
Okay. Excellent. Thanks.
Once again, to queue for a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad.
All right. Looks like there's no other questions. Just want to thank you all for making the time today, and I'll look forward to seeing many of you over the next 6 months. Thank you very much. Take care.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.